we are going on to item 6E, County Administration Personnel. Can we pass these out?
Yes, that's for this item.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Melissa Clemens, Deputy County Administrator for Personnel and Risk Management. Ms. Wendy did pass out the updated MOU for your information, and I'll touch on what changed from the one that was included in the agenda packet, the one that you have in front of you in just a moment. So this morning, I'm happy to present the successor MOU between the county and the Sheriff's Management Unit, starting June 25th, 2023, and continuing through June 24th, 2026. The MOU, as presented, includes a 5% COLA, benchmarking for certain classifications to other classifications that they supervise. It also memorializes retiree medical and dental contributions, numerous language cleanups to ensure compliance with various regulations, the addition of post-pay for a supervisory and management certificate, the addition of special pays for this unit, and then also, the item that changed, if you would turn to page 4 of that new MOU that you were just handed, under sections 7, 8, and 9, we included the duty commander pay, which was a previous side letter, and that was approved, and also we included the overtime for grant-funded or local emergencies. So we're just incorporating those side letters into the new MOU. And then lastly, we added the addition of holiday and leave for the Sheriff's Department classifications covered by this MOU only. It does not include the DA positions. So we would like to thank the members of the Sheriff's Management Unit for their collaboration in finalizing the successor MOU. We'd also like to thank Mr. Jarvis, who's our labor negotiator, and then Matt Rose, who's a business agent for Sheriff's Management Unit as well. The recommendation from staff is to approve the resolution regarding the MOU and the update to the salary schedule to implement these changes. And we are happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board? Board's wishes. Move to approve.
I'll second.
And that's for both the resolution and the MOU. Correct. All righty. Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to, we're going to indulge you here. We're going to move on to all this quick stuff, then we'll get onto the flood control. So I'm going to go on to item 8, County Service Area 4, public comment.
Showing online.
Got item B, transfer of funds.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
And that's for both?
Yes.
Both transfers, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Director Help?
Aye.
Director Cobbsett?
Aye.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela?
Yes. Item 8C, bill of approval.
I've received no corrections for those.
Second.
Okay. Director Help?
Aye.
Director Cobbsett?
Aye.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela.
Yes. Item 9 is minute approval.
And that should be, these I think we had people absent. So let's start with the 16th.
Item A. Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes. Item B.
Which is the 22nd.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Help?
Abstain.
Okay, Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Is that here for us? I guess so.
We may have to go through a fun formality deal here. I thought I missed the 23rd, but I missed the 16th with the Supervisor Valenzuela. My apologies on the day. I thought it was the last one that I missed.
So.
Okay, so I would have made the 22nd, so I'm a yes. 23rd, I did not make that.
So shall we do a revote on the 516 on A?
Sure.
Apologies on that. I just went through it real quick.
Let's get them correct. Someone's going to read it 20 years from now. And one of them.
I know. Why were you there? Why'd you vote? So, Natalie, would that be to rescind the first motion?
To rescind and to approve.
Okay, so somebody want to make that motion?
I made that motion.
Okay. Okay, and that's to rescind and reconsider?
Supervisor Haupt, second.
Okay, so Supervisor Haupt.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobstaff.
Aye.
Supervisor Chris.
Abstain.
Thank you. Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes. Now item B.
Or did you want to abstain from the 16?
Did I?
I believe we're absent as well.
Yeah, you were absent as well on the 16.
Well, then I'm abstaining.
You are?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry. Are we trying together?
You and your motion.
Save it for the next week, huh? Okay. When I'm not here. Okay.
Okay.
Go on to item B now.
Okay, so we got those. Okay, so item B was 522, and Mr. Haupt was absent. Okay. And that one looks like it stands as Haupt abstained, mm-hmm. and everybody else voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Now the 23rd.
523, which was the Tule Lake. No, it was the the water, the Klamath Dams.
Mm-hmm.
Klamath Dams.
I wasn't here.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, so Supervisor Haupt.
Abstain.
Thank you. Supervisor Cobstaff.
Aye.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, let's,
okay.
Let's go back to flood control, item 7. Public comment.
Showing on the line.
Okay, let's go on to item B.
Good morning, Matt Parker, Natural Resources Specialist. Today is step two in our development of a strategic planning document for the Flood Control District for its Sigma responsibilities. Also, we've been referred to it as sort of the business plan that the GSA will have moving forward. So today, Emily from Stantec is here, and she's going to run through a quick PowerPoint presentation recapping the last meeting and then sort of the next steps moving forward. So I will stop there and let her take over.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you to the chair, to the board for welcoming us back again. As Matt said, my name is Emily Finnegan. I'm here on behalf of the Stantec facilitation team. Our team has been working as part of the Department of Water Resources Facilitation Support Services Program. A no-cost service provided to the GSA for facilitation activities. We can go ahead and move forward. So quick agenda, we're going to recap. We were here back in February, recap what we've done since then, and then discuss the proposed near and long-term tactics that will be in addition to the strategies and goals that we discussed last time, and then receive any additional feedback on the draft strategy document. Keep going. So, back in February, we came to you all, we reviewed the results of the SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats that came from several interviews with each of you, as well as our advisory committee chairs and other stakeholder groups within the three basins where we are working. During that meeting, we talked about the vision statement. We made some small revisions to the vision statement, and then we talked through the goals and strategies, which were focused on three main areas. The first was on decision-making, the second was on funding and resourcing, and the third was on communications and engagement. Following that meeting, we brought that same SWOT analysis to our three advisory committees across the three basins, had a really great discussion with them about the goals and strategies that we had all discussed, and they offered some input on the draft tactics and actions that we will be discussing today with you all. So a quick reminder about the strategy document elements. We have the vision statement, that's the description of the region's future state, something that we can commit to for the next 20 years for these three basins. And then we have the three goals, which really answer the what are we trying to accomplish with the strategy document. The strategies themselves answer how do we intend to do this, and kind of a general approach or method for achieving the goals. And today, we'll be focused on the tactics, which are the specific actions that the GSA can take to fulfill the strategies and goals. So just to bring us back into the mindset, this is the vision statement, hopefully you can read this, that we agreed upon last time. The Siskiyou County GSA will collaboratively work towards effective groundwater management to achieve and maintain the sustainability of the Shasta Valley, Butte Valley, and Scott Valley basins, consistent with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and the near and long-term goals defined in the groundwater sustainability plans, with fair consideration given to all beneficial groundwater users. The goals and strategies we'll just quickly review. We've already discussed these, so we'll go into too much detail. The first section is focused on decision-making, primarily to clarify the decision-making roles and responsibilities and the decision-making support processes that inform GSP implementation. So there are two strategies there. The first is to better define roles and responsibilities amongst the board members, staff, and advisory committee members. And the second is to establish regular communications and strengthen partnerships on projects with public agencies and other basin stakeholders. The second is focused on funding and resourcing. This was consistent across all of our interview conversations to really focus on developing a sustainable funding and resourcing strategy for GSP implementation and GSA administration that minimizes impacts to residents and ensures adequate staffing capacity. The two strategies there are first to understand what the costs are for GSP implementation and administration, and then determine what additional funding and staff may be needed, with a priority on minimizing impacts to residents and identifying sustainable funding sources. The second area, acknowledging that grant funding and external funding is a way to minimize impacts on residents, was to focus on securing grant and other external funding sources to support groundwater sustainability efforts. On. The last focus area, again, this is something we covered last time, was on communications and engagement. Again, we heard this consistently across the board from all the folks that we interviewed, to really make sure that the GSA is demonstrating the value of SGMA, of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, and the plans, and how those plans benefit the community and the overall sustainability of the three basins, to the public through regular engagement, education, and communication activities. The two strategies there were to focus on accessibility of data and ways that we can make the website a little bit more accessible for the public so that groundwater users can clearly understand current conditions in the basin and monitoring efforts underway. The second was focused on increasing education engagement around GSP implementation activities, specifically focused on projects as well as funding and fees, knowing that those will be priority topics for community members. Okay, so that is all review. We've discussed all that back in February. So today, our goal is to really focus on the tactics and actions that the GSA can implement, one within the next year, right, near-term tactics, and then long-term tactics are those that respond to challenges that may be a little bit more complex or resources may take a little more time to mobilize. So those long-term goals are envisioned to be completed by 2027. And so we've outlined two near-term and two long-term goals for each of those three topic areas: decision-making, funding and resourcing, and communications and engagement. So we'll have some pause for discussion as we walk through these now. So on decision-making tactics, this is, again, near-term is those that can be accomplished roughly within the next year. The first is to develop a document that outlines the roles and responsibilities of GSA staff, board members, and advisory committee members, and the process for making decisions and recommendations during GSP implementation. This one is also elevated during one of our advisory committee meetings as a tool that could be particularly useful for onboarding new advisory committee members. We have several advisory committee members who have been serving in their role for many years, who bring deep knowledge and wisdom and have this institutional knowledge about SGMA and the GSPs. But that knowledge may not be shared for new advisory committee members that step into this role. So developing a document like this would be really helpful to help clarify roles, but also to use as an onboarding document for new advisory committee members that step into that role. The second near-term tactic is to establish regular communications with agencies and organizations to outline shared goals and identify opportunities for collaboration on GSP implementation. We recognize that that could include the development of coordination agreements like MOUs with tribes and tribal members, but it could also be just establishing a regular sequence of communicating with various agencies and entities or identifying shared opportunities for collaboration. So I will pause there and see first if you agree or disagree with these tactics or anything that you would augment or amend to these tactics.
Anyone?
Right? Got a couple. In tactic one, it says GSA staff and then board members. You would, is that us?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we the GSA?
You are the GSA board.
The directors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Worded.
Okay. Yeah, we can add GSA board members. Yeah.
Yeah. And then memorandum of understanding with tribes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's exclusive just to tribes. It wouldn't be with other stakeholders, education districts, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't that be included there?
We included tribes in there because it was a group that was raised as a high priority for engaging with the GSA. But certainly that could include MOUs with other government agencies, RCPs, Water Master District, other groups that we discussed. Yeah, we can certainly add those other groups in there.
Would you like to give her the groups, and I don't want it to come back and forth. What
no, I, it could be just an inclusive statement.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and other entities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. I was, you know.
I didn't want to make it exclusive.
No, I get that.
Because it looks just
no,
exclusive.
No, you're right.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a good recommendation.
Okay.
We can add that. And we did discuss some of those groups last time. I know Supervisor Irvin, you provided us a list of some of the groups.
I think where I was, now all of a sudden, any group, and it was, I'm a group, I got to be a group. So I don't want to, so I think you're right. Other entities, not specific groups.
Just make it inclusive,
yeah.
Not exclusive.
Yeah,
to
right.
Yeah.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyone else? Ready? You're done?
I'm done.
Okay, we're good.
Okay. Great. So this is long-term thinking about before the next GSP update in 2027. Tactic three is to collaborate with other agencies and organizations on improvements to the groundwater monitoring network in the pursuit of multi-benefit projects. One thing to note, I'm sure you all are aware that the DWR Round 2 implementation grant funds were just the draft awards were recently announced, and Siskiyou GSA did very well relative to other GSAs across the state, and some of the project components for that funding will address that particular tactic in terms of improvements to the monitoring network and multi-benefit projects with other agencies and organizations. And then the fourth tactic there is identifying gaps in staff resources and capacity and securing additional personnel to assist the GSA with GSP implementation activities. Again, that was one that was highlighted in our interviews as a potential need, particularly technical staff that may be able to support Matt Parker, who is the GSA plan manager with GSP implementation activities. Pause there and see first if you agree or disagree with these tactics. Anything to augment or amend?
Anything on the board?
Nothing for me.
Should we have something in there that identifies data gaps?
Identifying data gaps?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can certainly.
We have a lot of unknowns that mm-hmm. need to be revealed long term.
Mm-hmm. And collaborating with other entities on addressing data gaps.
Yeah,
we can certainly make that note. My colleague is feverishly taking notes, so we can acknowledge that. Thank you, Supervisor.
Okay, you're good.
Great. Okay, rolling right along then. So this is the second topic area on funding and resources. The first here. Is to conduct an evaluation of fee and rate options for GSP implementation. Again, this is already underway with the DWR Round 2 grant components as one of the first tactics that will be implemented through that work. The second is to develop a process for tracking and sharing updates on funding pursuits for groundwater-related projects undertaken by other agencies and organizations. This tactic came directly from one of our advisory committees in a discussion recognizing that there are groundwater management activities that take place outside of SGMA and finding some way to get a better handle on what those other groundwater related projects are that are happening and making sure that those updates are being channeled both to the advisory committees but also to you all and kind of a cohesive understanding of groundwater management activities happening across the three basins. So pause there. Anything to add, augment?
So what's your idea, or what's floating around for the idea of tracking and sharing updates?
One idea that we discussed actually came out as a result of this discussion with the advisory committees is to include that as a standing item as part of our advisory committee discussions, also acknowledging that many of the folks that participate in those meetings who may not sit on the committees but just participate themselves have deep involvement in other groundwater-related projects, so it could be something that could just be an opportunity for comment. One other piece that was discussed was working with Matt in advance of those meetings to have check-ins with some agencies and organizations that we know are pursuing groundwater-related activities, and then part of the district update during advisory committee meetings would be to present out on those groundwater-related projects or other activities.
Is there any talk of like a project tracker, sort of a chart graph website?
Yeah, like a way to track.
So that if anybody goes to the website, they can see what projects are going, what kind of funding is available. And without trying to reinvent the wheel, NCRP has a really beautiful model of that. If you want to go to their website and look at what they're doing with all their funding and projects and stuff, it's really amazing.
Okay, yeah, that's a good
one. You can see exactly what the projects are and how and who's funded them and who's working on them and where they are in the process. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and one of our communications and engagement updates is related to website updates. I think that can probably be a crossover as well. I know the GSP Projects and Management Action section has a table of potential projects, but it's pretty lengthy, and I think now that we know a little bit more about the projects that are moving forward, we could probably refine that for publicly available.
It would be easier for people to see instead of relying on a conversation.
Right, having a track somewhere.
I guess that meant something different to me. What I'm confronted with constantly in that notice is multiple funding sources out there that groups in the basin are pursuing that are sometimes unrelated to the GSP. And it's difficult from my perspective to write support letters when I don't know how they fit in or where they're part of the big picture. So like a tracking thing to me would be at least a spreadsheet of kind of what we're working on and other things
known.
We know of in our basin.
I think something like that could encompass both, right? Like current projects underway, but also funding pursuits that we're aware of or opportunities that we're aware of. I also think the tactics from the decision-making goal related to developing more regular communications with other entities, we will surface more of what other groups are pursuing as a part of that regular, establishing regular communications with, you know, the RCDs, the Water Master District, et cetera.
Yeah, and that would help me out as a decision-maker because with probably 50 to 100 different projects going on within my basin, it's hard for me to assess how they fit together without seeing them in one place.
So the process right now, if someone is seeking a letter of support, they would come to you directly. Is there any involvement with
first.
Okay. Got it. So the request then would be looking at when other funding pursuits are being
or do you support this grant or not that
right.
we're proposing for submittal.
Right.
And sometimes they're related to our GSP, sometimes they're not. Does fit together in this fabric of watershed work.
We should we can chat a little bit more about that. I think that's an idea that we can explore a little further.
So on number one, as we evaluate the fee and rate structure option, I know basically it looks within the boundary itself, correct? And I'm a proponent for countywide because we know that outside of that boundary, there's more effect of what comes into the boundary. So we should all have skin in the game. So that should be part of that evaluation, I think.
That first tactic is really just looking at what the options are from a high level.
And that would at least be another option because I know the focus will be just on the boundaries. And I think we need to look outside that.
And actually, if we go into, which we will momentarily, the long-term goals is to look at kind of implementation of some type of fee, right? And then it's critical to that is a robust
education and engagement process around that. So we're really understanding what the broader stakeholder groups' interests are across the county, right? Doing some deep education around why this a fee, if there were to be a fee, why that fee would need to be in place, how it supports sustainability of the basin. So this is kind of an interim, just looking at the options, and then long term would be robust education and engagement and input from the community as you know, some type of fee structure, if there, again, it would be a fee structure to be developed.
We don't want to get too in depth in here because we all will be looking at options, but I'll be on the opposite side of mine. I represent two communities. City of Mushasta, City of Denver, their own sovereign entity. They have their own water source. For them to pay another fee isn't going to fly very well on that thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of get outside the boundary, a little bit, you know, contiguous, but not incorporated cities, for God's sake.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say across our stakeholder interviews, there were diverging opinions about how a fee would roll out, which is really speaks to the input process that is needed to fully understand and flesh out the different perspectives on a fee.
Well, and I'm looking more at the influences to what happens in the boundary, because water to be sustainable within the boundary could be affected by the upper watershed and federal grant. So, I mean, they should be a player in this. So, I mean, I'm not looking at the cities per se. I'm just saying we're all in this. So, and there'll be a point at which, even though we say it'll never happen, but domestic wells, somewhere along the line, the state's going to throw that down on us. And again, preventative measure, from my perspective, is local control is everyone. It's not just those that are within that basin, because they can only affect what happens within their boundary. Outside of it has other influences that should be a player as well.
So, sure. And I understand that Mushasta does it, but in the case of my two cities, one is a surface water reserve in the basin, and the other is a groundwater pumper.
But my cities are not in that space.
I understand.
Yeah, so I'm in the Sacramento, you know, type thing.
Yes.
But I think this would be, there'll be a very robust discussion.
Absolutely.
How this plays out.
I'm sure more than one.
Yeah.
So this is acknowledging that we need to identify those options.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So into the long-term plans, again, this is over the next several years. The first is to develop a staffing plan for identifying, prioritizing, and applying for and managing grants. This was identified as a potential opportunity. This may include leveraging resources across other county departments with similar grant management needs, right? So how can we tap into other county departments that are managing these large-scale grants? What other staffing resources might be needed in order for us to more effectively manage external funding sources? And then tactic four, again, this is longer term, developing a rate and fee schedule to fund GSP implementation and GSA administration costs. You'll see when we get to communications and engagement goals that that robust communication engagement is critical to the implementation of that tactic four. So I will pause there. Any agreements, disagreements, anything to add or augment?
I know on the grants, the county's GSA was a contributor towards it. But sometimes it's helping the other entities, the Bee Valley Irrigation District, as well as the City of Doris applied for a grant in the Bee Valley area. We assisted in some way, but we empower those or assisted those entities in pursuing what we're after anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I said whatever we want to phrase in there for partnerships with the members when they're applying for it also.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for two entities to apply for the same grant. For those and support those that are. This, in that example, the City of Doris is managing that grant, which is wonderful because then they're skin of the game because they use groundwater, and it also frees up our county staff
because
they want to manage that grant as well.
Yeah.
Just assist and help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that has a lot of crossover with the first set of tactics around building those partnerships and kind of sharing joint opportunities. But yeah, I think we can also make a note there in terms of helping, you know, other basin stakeholders with their grant kind of pursuit process.
And that'd be recognized stakeholders, not just a I represent some sort of watershed.
Sure. Some sort of public agencies, organizations, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay.
Just quickly, to avoid all the conflict with the last discussion we had, is there a way to at least study or ask the question whether or not if you're gonna pursue like a tax, that it be set up in a like a basin district for that purpose, rather than get into the minutia of who's in the basin, who's not in the basin.
Yeah, Matt could speak much better on this topic, probably in terms of what scope.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do. And if you remember a few years back, we did that preliminary fee sort of high-level analysis, and they broke it down by each basin.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. We would absolutely have to do it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll just add to that for the long term. I mean, implementation and the GSA administrative costs have to be sustainable within itself. It cannot be dependent on grants one and county general fund. Because
mm-hmm.
currently we're blending that, I think, or is the grant mainly paying for everything?
Currently blending.
Blending.
But eventually the grant we're receiving will.
Right. 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 So it has to be sustainable on its own. The
mm-hmm.
county can't. And then we made that clear when we rolled this out. There will be costs down the road where the county can't pick this tab up.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we felt, or at least I thought we felt, that we were going to take on to keep local control,
mm-hmm.
but it would have to, again, sustain itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know a good portion of the grant, the TWR grant, is focused on addressing this issue and kind of setting up what fee options there are and what kind of a fee rollout might look like.
I would just add that addressing what you said earlier, the district boundary for me would be the watershed boundary, not the legal
yeah.
basin boundary
mm-hmm.
that we can find our analysis to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot that I'm seeing that already done. There's a lot that we can probably discuss about fees and funding options as that work gets started and we kind of look at what our options are. I think we'll be working in step with Matt, with Larry Walker, and the other consultants around even thinking about conceptualizing what a fee option might look like. So there's a lot more discussion to be had, certainly.
Anyone else? Moving along.
All righty. Last section here. Communications and engagement tactics. So one is a pretty low-hanging fruit, is to do an update to the communications and engagement plan. That was last updated in 2020. It was really focused on GSP development. There hasn't been an update focused on GSP implementation activities, and this is actually one of the things that the Department of Water Resources looks for when they're doing their plan reviews. And that actually is an activity that could likely be covered with DWR Facilitation Support Services programs at no cost to the GSA. So that is one that we can get started on pretty quickly. One of the high priorities in that is to outline a schedule of activities and milestones for communications and engagement. One of the things that we've already done to improve communications and engagement is to establish a regular advisory committee schedule. Those are now happening quarterly. The dates are announced in advance. And I think just creating more structure around the communications and engagement activities will be really beneficial across all three basins. The second tactic is to update the GSA website to improve navigation and maintain regular updates. Again, this is something we talked about with Matt, doing kind of a website analysis, looking at where things landing pages are and kind of where things are currently located, and making sure that the most recent information is most accessible, having clear, you know, project tracking, funding tracking options on the website, so that folks can really understand what the current activities are of the GSA. Any augmentations or amendments to these two?
We're good.
Great. Next. So this last two, again, these are long-term goals before the next GSP update in 2027 to improve accessibility of groundwater monitoring data. This is something that's already been discussed at a high level with the advisory committees, and I know Laura from Larry Walker and Associates has been doing a lot of thinking about kind of what access could look like around monitoring data. And then tactic four is to conduct public workshops and educational events to proactively, that's a key word, communicate anticipated GSP funding and fees and incorporate community input into fee options and resourcing strategy. I think we've heard just today how important that input will be. We're thinking about funding and fees, so really being proactive as we're starting these conversations here to make sure that they're happening with the broader community as well. Any amendments?
So on three, I get the public accessibility to monitoring. I mean, good data isn't something to hide. But how do you get property owners, landowners to participate without being one, liable, or two, you know, having good data that can be twisted and used, well, potentially in a lawsuit somewhere down the line?
Yeah, I think Matt can probably speak a little bit to this. I know, Laura, this wouldn't be parcel-level data, right, that would be identified to any individual landowner. It would be kind of summarized through different kind of management areas within the basins. But I don't know if there's more you want to say.
Yeah, I'll keep it kind of high-level. And actually, the next item kind of relates to this. But I think, I mean, it's a very good question, something we've been discussing a lot, both internally with our consultants as well as the irrigators and landowners and water users. And that, as you all know, with today's climate, data is becoming more important for all parties. And so I think we're seeing more willingness from landowners to collect and share data, but with, I don't want to say restrictions, but limitations. So what you're outlining doesn't happen. However, as we all know, any data can be changed to make your own point. So it's something we're working on as we speak, and so the next item will kind of cover that as well. But it's something we talk about constantly with our advisory committee and also internally, but how to most effectively do that, but be a little more transparent with what's occurring out there.
Yeah, do you mean not change that, interpreted that?
Yes, interpret. If I said change, yeah. Then that's correct.
No one can go in there and change it.
No, right.
How you interpret it is
exactly
the issue.
Yeah.
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 Just a question. I mean, my overarching goal is to protect the confidentiality of an individual who's participating with us. And I guess I'm asking counsel, how can we protect that against public records and patent requests? Or can we?
We really can't, and we make that disclosure to persons who participate in the data collection that will notify them if a public records act comes in, and we can, you know, attempt to find exceptions to disclosure, but we are subject to the Public Records Act.
But can we redact the owner of a particular data account?
We would probably redact consistent with the way that we redact well permits and records,
okay,
so that you don't identify a person with a location.
Okay, thank you.
Any other?
Anyone else?
Questions?
Okay.
Okay. So just to summarize then, in the next year, of course with the support of GSA staff and consultants, on the docket is to develop this document that outlines roles and responsibilities of GSA staff. I'll make an amendment to say the GSA board members and advisory committee members, to establish regular communications, for example, coordination agreements with other agencies and organizations related to GSP implementation activities. The third is to evaluate fee and rate options. Next, to develop a process for tracking and sharing updates on parameter-related projects undertaken by other agencies and the GSA. And third, to update the CME plan, communications and engagement plan for GSP implementation. And then the last one there, to update the website to improve map and navigation and maintain regular updates. And then if you flip on over, just to summarize, in the next 5 years, improve collaboration with other agencies on improvements to the monitoring network. We can also add there addressing data gaps and on multi-benefit projects. The next one there is to identify gaps in staff resourcing and secure additional personnel as needed. The next one is to develop a long-term staffing plan for identifying, prioritizing, applying for, and managing grants. Again, recognizing that other county departments also manage grants, so how can we tap into other county resources there? The next one is to develop a rate and fee schedule. We talked pretty extensively about that one. The second to last one there is to improve accessibility of monitoring data, of course, acknowledging some of the data concerns that were just discussed, and making sure that we're protecting the information of those that are sharing their data. And then the last one there is conducting public workshops and educational events to proactively communicate anticipated GSP funding and fees. So this is just a summary of what we've discussed. If we flip on over any other high-level thoughts, reflections, anything we may be missing?
One of the things that we've brought up through this process, we've compared this program to SMARA, kind of when the county took that over. And with lawsuits that could happen, potentially, the county's been liable for those costs. This is going to be something similar, and how do we protect, one, the plan, but protect the county as well from that litigation that potentially could come?
Mm-hmm. From staffing resourcing, or is there, or is that a broader?
If we were to get sued on the plan, the cost will be borne by, not the grant, it will be borne by essentially county at this point. We're self-insured, but as PRISM one that steps in on this for us, how does this work?
So, Natalie Reed, County Council, if one of your actions adopting, which you've already done, so that would be challenged, or amending the plan was challenged, it would be a writ. And so it would be challenging your actions as arbitrary and capricious. It is unlikely to involve, I would assume, damages. And so it would be litigation that would need to be covered by the flood district. How do you avoid that litigation?
I don't know that you avoid it, but how do we protect ourselves from that? Because SMARA's cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars. And our fee-based...
And maybe that's working, with the CAO to plan for, the potentiality of a suit.
Well...
Financially, yes.
Yeah.
That'll warrant a discussion down the line.
I get it. I don't know. So, at any rate, it's a potential something down the road.
I don't know why we didn't just sort of bring it up at this point, but I think long term we ought to be pursuing a grant for the GSA to own our own monitoring wells and strategically place them within the basin, much like USGS does with screen gauges. That way we get out of this trap of having a private owner committing their well, because their wells that are monitored are also used for extraction. These would just be monitoring stations, if you will, across the basins. That way we could work with UC Davis and place them exactly strategically where they should be to do the monitoring across the basin.
I know that at least we use some DWR-owned wells or other public agency-owned wells.
Yeah, those are kind of a shotgun scatter approach, you have some coverage here, a little over there, and none here. They just aren't scientifically placed in the basin to get the accurate results we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know there is some funding through the DWR Technical Support Services Program for installing monitoring wells. Helping several other basins with that right now. The challenge is getting access to the land and that whole process of navigating county land. Yeah.
Yes, Chris.
Just to follow up on that, I don't want to be a wet blanket, and I think it's something we should consider, absolutely. But just, you know, if we do put those watering wells out there, what we would do, because they probably have to be on some private properties in different areas, mm-hmm. you know, so that would be mail and monitorship, confidentiality, and all those sorts of things.
Or in the county right away somewhere.
Or it could be, yeah, it could be.
Well, just so you know, I suggested that long ago, put it at the schools, fire, just, you know, firehouses, you know, all the public entities, and, you know, I mean, that's a bit of
it. Some place it works.
Yeah,
just to real quick, and we have been doing that already. DWR does have a well program. It's very expensive, but we have one installed on county property in Gazelle for the Shasta Valley. We're in the process of going to the contract for one in Butte Valley at the airport, and we've explored locations in Scott Valley as well. So it's DWR has this program. It's just very time-consuming, expensive, and they're very resource poor on this front, but they're willing to help out. So they're very sophisticated, but yeah, we've discussed that, how to expand that a lot. It's just time, money.
Put that in the infrastructure letter.
There you go. Some time.
What's the approximate cost of a monitoring? Depending on the various factors, I know you want to go certain depths.
I think these ones that DWR are paying for, they're well into six figures, but they're pretty sophisticated, and they're going to be they're going to collect a lot of data. But I'd have to ask them what it's costing, because they've modified some of the technology that they use.
There's no the cost of wells and listening to people that
right.
Things go on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will take the recommendations and changes today, and I think Matt will bring this back to seek approval at a future board meeting, but since most of the amendments were relatively minor, so we can make those, share that with you all. Thank you all.
Thank you.
If there's anything else that comes to mind, my contact info is there. Feel free to reach out. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to go into closed session.
We got one more.
Oh, one more? I'm sorry.
Are you ready? Yeah, this is just a simple update to our data access form we have with well monitoring and stigma-related data collection. So just a simple update that kind of outlines some of what is shared if your request for data sharing. I recommend approval.
Sure.
So, do we have any signers yet, or we haven't put this out?
We actually, previous versions, yes, we have signers. Now, as of thus far, we have not had any objections to it. I think the folks we've been working with are open to sharing data, understanding,
Yeah, I get it.
They can pull the plug if things go awry.
Yeah,
so we're doing our best to work with the folks out there.
Understood. Thank you.
There's really nothing to hide. It's just good data to support what we do.
Okay, this is an action item?
Yes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, Director Haupt.
Aye.
Director Kobzeff.
Aye.
Director Chris.
Aye.
Director Obrin.
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela.
Yes. Item D is minute approval of the 16th.
And I don't believe I've received any changes on those. Just a sec here. All right. Director Haupt?
Aye.
Director Kobzeff?
Aye.
Director Chris?
I was absent, so we'll abstain.
Abstain, thank you. Director Obrin?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela?
Yes. Okay, we're going to adjourn as the flood control, and we are going to go into closed session.
Second.